Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swa Padantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare About Three days before I left California to come here, His Grace Madhu Mangal Das, who has served in Port Elizabeth and Cape Town, came to visit me. And in the car, as we were driving just a few minutes from downtown Carpinteria to our little ashram, he asked what was the most significant instruction that Srila Prabhupada ever gave you. And at the time, the words that came to mind were four. I can tell you what they are, but the problem is that the context of the four words is very important. And at the time, I felt that I didn't have the time to explain the context. So I told Madhu Mangal Prabhu I will answer later, and I never got the chance. And then I felt maybe I should have tried to answer. The four words are, thank you very much, which is something that probably everyone in this world has said hundreds of times. So what's important is the context, and that's what I will explain. Srila Prabhupada had come to Boston, and his program then was every second day, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, he would speak outside the temple, usually at a college. At least Tuesday and Thursdays would be at colleges. And then Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, he would speak at the temple. And then Sunday would be the Sunday feast and lecture. So one of the first college programs I went to, and I would come every night. So one of the first I went to was at Boston College. And Srila Prabhupada gave a general lecture. And at the end, he took questions, and I was always very fascinated by the questions and answers. It was almost the favorite part of the programs for me. And I was struck by how he would give different answers to the same question on different occasions. And at the time, people heard stories, I also heard stories of the starvation in India. I heard that there were dead bodies on the streets of Calcutta. People who had died from starvation, and in the morning, people would come with wheelbarrows and pick up the dead bodies. So it was quite a serious question in people's minds. And quite frequently they asked, if Krishna consciousness is the solution to all problems, what about the problems of starvation in India? What can Krishna consciousness do to solve the hunger problem? So that particular evening at Boston College, Srila Prabhupada gave the example that there is enough food, but because some people take more than their share, there's less for others. So there appears to be a scarcity of food, but actually there is no scarcity. Now, the only scarcity is Krishna consciousness. And he gave the example that if you put a bag of grains in a public square, birds will come and take one bird will come and take a few grains and go away, another will come and take a few grains and go away, another will take a few grains and go away, and there will be enough for everyone. But if a human being comes, he'll take the whole bag and hoard it and try to sell it and make profit. So after the questions and answers, there was kirtan. And generally then the devotees would dance in a circle in front of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a raised dais, and there was some space between him and the rows of seats where the students were sitting. So we began to dance in a circle, and I don't recall exactly who was leading the kirtan. Sometimes Satsvarupa Maharaj did. But during the kirtan, somehow my heart just opened up. I never had such an experience before. My heart just became filled with love for everyone who was in the room. I was just looking at the people in the room and feeling so much love for them. And then the sense of love expanded, beyond the perimeters of the room into the world. And I just felt that I was, just felt so much love for all living entities in the world. And I was quite struck by the experience. So when the kirtan ended, I was so overwhelmed by the experience, without even thinking, I walked up right next to Srila Prabhupada where he was sitting on, like a Vyasasana, it was very raised platform. And I just blurted out, Srila Prabhupada, this chanting is wonderful. And when Srila Prabhupada heard those words, his eyes opened up wide and his face broke into this huge smile. And it was like Sally Agarwal said that when he smiled, it was just oceanic. It was as if waves of ecstasy were emanating from Srila Prabhupada's person. And he started to chuckle. But it wasn't an ordinary chuckle like we might laugh if someone tells a joke. But it was, intuitively I could understand that he was feeling transcendental ecstasy. So he was chuckling. It was almost silent. But his body was heaving and he was smiling and his eyes were wide open. And these waves of ecstasy were just emanating from him and filling the room. And he looked at me and he said, "Thank you very much." And I guess I'm taking that now. Of course, there were so many instructions over the years, but I'm taking that somehow as the most significant instruction, which is to, well, I've never actually tried to articulate this before, so I'm trying to think of it for the first time. What did that mean? Well, the first is to chant, but not just to chant and experience what the chanting can actually create within us, or awaken within us. And that is love. You know, love. That is our goal. Love. Krishna prema. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I guess that's, again, I'm thinking about it for the first time, really, that, yes, love for Krishna and friendship with devotees and compassion for the innocent. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that that's the natural result of chanting, offenseless chanting, that one will feel compassion for others and then manifest that compassion by trying to give them Krishna consciousness, to bring them to Krishna consciousness. And I guess another purport to the incident is that just appreciating what Srila Prabhupada had given us gave Srila Prabhupada so much pleasure. Just the fact that we were getting some glimpse of what the holy name was gave Srila Prabhupada so much pleasure. And later I've thought that that was really Srila Prabhupada's only desire, that people should chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And I guess part of it also was that obviously by feeling the pleasure of Krishna consciousness and expressing it to Srila Prabhupada, he felt pleasure. And then when he felt pleasure, we felt more pleasure. And it was like a transcendental competition, I guess you could say. Like, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about Govardhan Hill, he raised the question that how could Govardhan Hill, which is just a medium-sized mountain, give shelter to all the residents of Vrindavan? all the residents of the whole tract of Vrindavan found shelter under Govardhan Hill. But how is it possible? Because Govardhan Hill is just a medium-sized mountain. So he gives the answer that being touched by the by the little finger of Krishna's left hand, that Govardhan Hill felt so much ecstasy that he expanded in size. That's also one of the ecstatic symptoms, that you become elongated. Lord Chaitanya also sometimes, his body became elongated. And then, like, the further commentary is that when that the pure servant takes pleasure when the master is pleased. He doesn't mind any inconvenience. And when the master sees that the servant is enjoying pleasure, then the master becomes more pleased. And when the servant sees that the master is enjoying more pleasure, then he becomes more pleased, and the master becomes more pleased, and it just keeps expanding. So I think that was the experience there. It was like Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. It was just Srila Prabhupada's pleasure expanding. Shishi Radharadhanath ki jai, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I guess as many devotees have commented, Krishna consciousness is like an ocean of nectar. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya are like an ocean of nectar. It's impossible to even begin to describe them. But if we just taste one drop from the ocean, we'll get a sense of what the ocean tastes like. So, I guess that's my drop for tonight. I will be here for another week. On Wednesday, we'll be having a film show at the temple in Phoenix about Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, and I'll speak about Srila Prabhupada in Bombay then. thought that we should, I guess, pursuant to Srila Prabhupada's appreciation of our chanting, we should go to the stage for the final kirtan, or have it here, and have the final kirtan here. And I'm so glad I got to hear from His Holiness Indradumya Swami and His Holiness Bibi Govinda Maharaj. It's always a pleasure to hear devotees speak about their experiences and realizations of Srila Prabhupada. I never really gotten to hear them speak in such an extended and coherent in the sense of continuous way. One instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave me very early was to write. And it was always in my mind that I had to write. And sometimes I would write articles for Back to Godhead. And in fact, it was in response to an article in Back to Godhead that Srila Prabhupada first gave me the direct instruction to write. And I must say, in all humility and with all gratitude that His Holiness Indradumya Swami was very instrumental in helping me to take up that instruction. Even talking about Srila Prabhupada's instructions is difficult for someone in a situation like me, because there were so many instructions. And they came, they were like on a daily basis practically when I was with Srila Prabhupada in Juhu. There'd be many every day. And, you know, after Srila Prabhupada left and after circumstances changed, you know, it was a question like, okay, there are all these instructions, you know, is there some hierarchy? Is there some priority? Just to give an example, Srila Prabhupada never liked us to waste electricity. And if he would see that there was electricity being wasted, he would point it out. Even if we weren't the ones who were wasting it, like on a morning walk in Pune, it happened a couple of times. He noticed that the street lamps were still on after sunrise. And he said, you know, what mismanagement, you know. It's already light and you know, they're burning electricity. What mismanagement? They don't know how to manage. So there's a whole range from that to, you know, writing. In the midst of your heavy duties, go on writing something about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Writing means expressing the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness, how you've realized it. But it seemed, and I knew it, it seemed that that was really an important instruction that was meant to continue under all circumstances. So, one time, I mean, usually every year, Indradumya Swami comes to visit me. And one time he came and he sort of helped put everything in perspective. Because I was, you know, as usual, trying to do everything and hardly accomplishing anything. So he met with the other devotees and heard from them, and then he met with me. And he sort of gave the priorities that first, well, it was all related to the writing. First is the writing, and then pursuant to the writing, I should sort of take care of my immediate staff, because they're the support for my health and for my service, which was the writing. And then, you know, after that, you know, I could go out for programs, because we do get enlivened when you go out and preach, but not, you know, not too much. And then, you know, sort of like entertaining people at our little ashram, because, you know, much as I enjoy doing it and much as I relish the association, it was an effort, not just for me, but for the whole staff. So that sort of, you know, put things in perspective, and you know, I tried to follow that, and I think I've done relatively well. I shouldn't be the one to say it. Maharaj should say. I guess this, the purport to this, if there needs to be one, is that sometimes Srila Prabhupada will speak to us through our God brothers or through others. Because I take Maharaj's instructions as you know, well, it's pursuant to the basic instruction to write, but there are details. So, okay, well, you know, that was fine, and so this should be my priority. I made it my priority. And then about a year ago, our god brother Shyamasundar Prabhu was putting on a big festival at Cross Maidan in Bombay. In fact, if you see the film on Wednesday, there are shots of the first big pandal in India, which was in Bombay. And, you know, he really wanted me to come, and he was like chastising me like anything. And it was like, and then Radhanaswami got on the phone, and he was like so loving and charming, and it's like with him, like you forget external reality. So I said, yeah, I can do that, sure. I can come. So everything was proceeding in that direction until by some arrangement. Oh, and it's funny, I sort of, you know, let the word out, and you know, the first person to write back with reservation was His Holiness Indradumya Swami. And the other one was Mother Sangeeta. She's a nurse, and she is working with me on the hospice project in Vrindavan. But otherwise, everyone was sort of positive, or maybe they're just going along with my mood. So then, maybe a month before I was scheduled to leave, I met an Ayurvedic doctor, Vaidya Mishra. I guess this is also Krishna's arrangement. And Vaidya Mishra, you know, he listened to my pulse, and, you know, he had his secretary write down some Sanskrit terms that describe my pulse. And, you know, eventually I asked him the big question, you know, what do you think about my traveling to India now? And he said, no. You know, if you try to travel now, it will set you back. And I was very attached to the idea. Within my mind, I was very attached to the idea. And I kept giving so many arguments in favor of going. And he was adamant. He was absolutely adamant. He said, no. And I liked it. You know, he's like Prabhupada, like no compromise. He didn't change his position, you know, to please his audience. And then finally he said, well, you know, if you follow my prescription, you know, maybe in a year you'll be able to travel. So I was disappointed, but later on, I felt relieved. Actually, within myself, I felt relieved because I guess I realized I wasn't ready to travel. And I wrote Maharaj, and Maharaj wrote back, you know, thank God for that doctor. And he said, you know, you remember from the beginning, I was the first one who expressed reservations about the whole idea. So anyway, I followed his prescription, and I really was improving. I mean, I could feel it. I think he's definitely empowered. I mean, he has some mystic powers. He has told me, but he's told a common friend that that the well, I don't know. Anyway, but I'll finish it because I started it. But it's probably not something one should discuss so freely, but that the herbs tell him what they can do, you know, the different herbs, and seems that he has some relationship with Soma, the moon god, who provides taste of the vegetables. And anyways, he's good. He's actually, since I'm already into this mess, he's actually descended from a family of Vaidyas who treated Lord Krishna's son, Samba. Yeah, he told me the story. That his ancestors come from an island called Shakadweep, which is mentioned in the Puranas. And that one time, Samba had a disease that no one in Dwarka could cure. In fact, no one that Lord Krishna could find could cure the disease. So then the great sage Narada came and told Lord Krishna there's an island called Shakadweep, and the people on the island have the ability to... They're the only ones who will be able to cure Samba. So Krishna sent Garuda to Shakadweep, and seven couples got on Garuda, and he brought them to Dwarka, and they cured Samba, and then they stayed in India, and they've become this line of Vaidyas. So... Anyway, wrote Maharaj, I didn't dare really to go beyond Maharaj, you know. I'm not going to like make any big pronouncements. I'm just going to write him and see what he says. But it did come in my heart that I should come here. I felt it actually came, it came very strongly after His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami left, that in such a short period of time, these three stalwart preachers, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Sridhar Swami, and Bhaktitirtha Swami, had left. And, you know, I felt it was the duty of all of us to try to do something to give solace to the devotees and to take up the work that they left behind for all of us. So that came strongly in my heart, and I wrote Maharaj, and he wrote back, "You can, but only on certain conditions." And then he listed the conditions. One, the Vaidya has to approve. Two, you just come straight to Durban. You don't travel around. Let the devotees come to Durban to meet you. I tried to disobey that, but Krishna didn't let me. I'll explain that. And he gave some other instructions. Oh, yeah, and that my doctor, my other doctor, that's another story, Shivallabh Das. Shivallabh, are you here now? Yeah, that my doctor come with me, and that I, you know, basically bring with me and follow the same regimen that I follow back in California. So Shivallabh immediately agreed to come, and, you know, working out the details with Swarup Damodar Prabhu and others, you know, I got the sense we could do everything pretty much the way I'm supposed to. The only thing left was Vaidya Mishra's permission, and he wasn't coming to Santa Barbara. He's based in Los Angeles, and he wasn't coming. We were getting down to, like, 2 weeks before I was supposed to leave, and I didn't buy the ticket. I couldn't buy the ticket because I couldn't leave without his permission. And he travels a lot, you know. He's hardly even in L.A. But finally I got a message. He's going to be in L.A. and you know, he can meet you at such and such time on Wednesday. That was like a week before the schedule department. So I went, he felt my pulse. The first thing he said is, "You've been traveling, haven't you?" And it's true, because of about 4 weeks before that, I'd gone to Chicago. I was there for a week, flying, then flew back. And then I was really tired of flying. Flying can really be difficult. But I was scheduled to go up to Northern California and meet His Holiness Satsarupa Das Goswami Maharaj. So I thought, okay, I'll drive there, which I did. And I, you know, it was a very nice tour. I mean, no doubt about it. I was with Satsarupa Maharaj for 5 days, and I met His Holiness Tripurari Swami, and then I came down and visited His Holiness Sri Dayananda Das Goswami Maharaj, and Guru Prasad Swami happened to come the same day as me, and we had wonderful talks. Anyway, I'm going to the details, but I did too much, and the doctor could tell. So I said, yes, I have been traveling. I said, okay. But then I had to ask him the question, you know. I told him about South Africa, and he was silent. And I said, you know, I told him my whole strategy to break journey and rest on the way. So then he said, what will you do when you get there? So I said, I'll speak, I'll meet devotees. So then he said, you cannot do more than 2 hours of speaking per day. You know, one in the morning and one in the evening. And on the days that you travel, no speaking. In other words, he didn't directly say no, and he didn't directly say yes. But he sort of gave me the idea how it could work. So there was, you know, discussion, more discussion, and then in the end I said, because he has his students with him, and anyway, I think they couldn't understand what was happening, although I knew exactly what was happening. So I sort of had to say to them, you know, he's being tactful. He's not saying yes, but he's not saying no. So indirectly, he's saying yes. And then the doctor said, yes. He said, I cannot say yes because it will be hard on your system. But because you're going for God's work, Lord Krishna will protect you. So he said, don't worry, you can go. But don't take advantage of it also that Lord Krishna will protect you. You have to follow my advice too. So here we are. I coincidentally finished 3 volumes. I kept writing and writing. You know, I always feel I'm not doing enough. So I kept writing and writing and writing and thinking, you know, eventually I'll have enough to print a volume. So my editor is Bhakta Karl Herzig, who's actually Tamal Krishna Goswami's brother. He's a professor of English in Iowa. And one day he added up, you know, he said, you know, we have 120 chapters so far. Oh, God. So I made like a rough calculation. figured maybe 5-6 pages for each one, and we weren't done yet, because so anyway, we had to keep going. I think we're probably up to 140 or 150, and then at like an emergency meeting, it can't fit in one book, and we figured we have to bring out 3 volumes. So that all sort of finished. That was, you know, I had to do that. You know, I had to do that. And then this invitation came, and Maharaj's blessings and the good arrangements of the devotees and Sri Vallabh. I don't know what I would do without Sri Vallabh, because after each flight, it's like I feel dreadful, you know, just like dreadful. He gives me a massage, and it's amazing. I get completely rejuvenated. Each time, well, England was a little harder because of the jet lag, but when I arrived in Johannesburg, it was the same thing, and when I arrived here, it was the same thing. A treatment, a hot meal, good prasad, and a walk. Just completely revived. So I also feel that Sri Vallabh was sent by Krishna to bring me to the state that I could travel and to come with me and make it all work. So so now my plan is, you know, try to follow the doctor's order and do Krishna's work to whatever extent I can while I'm here. Then go to India and take care of some things there. That would be January, February. You know, I guess the immediate reason is for the hospice project, but there's a lot. And visit Vrindavan and spend some time with my god brothers there. And then, I guess, come back and start the next writing project. And I hope His Holiness Indradumya Swami will visit me after that, because I need the next blueprint. I just follow the blueprint that he set out for me. And you know, I take this also as Srila Prabhupada's mercy. He's given us instructions, and he's given us the association that we need to give us the strength and intelligence and inspiration to follow the instructions. And Bibi Govinda Maharaj, I think, wow, what a service. He just chants all the time. What a service. I mean, I could say so much about him, but if because there's not too much time, I'll just take one little incident that can give you some sense of his glories. Of course, you know his glories just from your own experience. But he himself, in a confidential moment, told me, "The king loved me." That is also 4 words. That's 4 words. The king loved me. But those words also require some context. Do you know what the context is?
No.
Well, the king of rock is Elvis Presley. How many of you have heard of Elvis Presley? And Maharaj's father was Elvis's first agent, who arranged Elvis's tours in Tennessee or wherever. And you know, Elvis had a very close relationship with Maharaj's father, and sometimes he'd come to Maharaj's house and spend time. And sometimes when his father would have to go out, he would ask Elvis to stay and look after... What was he? Sean. He would ask Elvis to look after Sean. And so they developed a very loving relationship. And once Elvis took Sean to the state fair, and at the state fair, there was a concession where, I don't know if you have that here, but there's a concession where you would throw a ball, and if you would, depending on which target you hit, you'd get a prize. So Elvis threw the ball and he hit a target and he won a prize. But it wasn't what Sean wanted. Sean was about 4 years old and he wanted the big teddy bear. So Elvis asked for the big teddy bear, and the owner of the concession said, "I'm sorry, sir, but from the target you hit, you're not eligible to get the teddy bear." So Elvis pulled back his fist, punched the guy in the face, grabbed the teddy bear, and gave it to Sean. And then, you know, Sean's father was sort of, you know, involved with Elvis's career, but then Elvis became sort of more international and other agents started to handle him. And then for a while, his agents thought he shouldn't do public performances. I guess they thought people would appreciate him more if he wasn't so public for a while. But he did his recordings and his records were selling, and then after some time they decided he should perform again. So they booked him in Las Vegas, and Elvis made a special point to invite Sean's father, that he must be there at his first return concert. And he wanted to meet the father after the concert. So after the concert was over, Elvis came out and he met Sean's father. What was his name?
Bob Neal.
And he, you know, they greeted each other, and Elvis asked, you know, "How's Sean? Where's Sean these days?" And Bob said, "He's become a Hare Krishna." And Elvis said, "A Hare Krishna? What's a Hare Krishna?" And Sean's father said, "They practice yoga." So Elvis said, "Oh, that's very good. That's very good." So we don't know who we might be sitting next to. I mean, here I'm... Here I'm sitting next to Govinda Maharaj. We just glimpse a fraction of his glories. You know, we don't know the whole of it. So I feel very safe and protected by these two stalwart generals in Srila Prabhupada's army and in Srila Prabhupada's shelter, broader shelter with all of you. Thank you very much. So now we'll have kirtan.
Just to add one point to what he said, I met somebody, it wasn't last summer, it was the summer before, we did a tour in America, and in New York we have a godbrother, his name is Yogeshwar Prabhu, and he's a professional advertising person. And so for our program with our bhajan group, they did professional advertising, and they did a a press release. It was talking about the Swami from Tennessee who had Elvis as his babysitter. And so everyone was reading that I knew Elvis when I was a kid. So we did this program, and then one devotee came up to me. You know, one second generation devotee, he came up to me, and he was like so full of awe and veneration, you know. He went, "My God, my God, you saw the two most magnificent people." And I said, "Who do you mean?" And he said, "Srila Prabhupada and Elvis Presley."